It's Wednesday, March 11th. Here's what's happening in Northeast Indiana. A master planning agreement has been approved for the City of Fort Wayne's North River District project. The deadline to register to vote in Indiana's primary election is approaching. And it's still uncertain how much money is remaining to sustain Indiana's Dolly Parton Imagination Library program. I'm Brianna Barrow, and this is Who and What. A master planning agreement has been approved for the City of Fort Wayne's North River District project. The Fort Wayne Redevelopment Commission approved the agreement with Kansas City-based PB Development on Monday. The commission will pay $182,500, a 50% match of funds from the Allen County Capital Improvement Board, according to a press release. In late February, the Capital Improvement Board approved up to $1.5 million to support the project. The 29-acre site was a former rail and scrapyard. It has not been used since 2006. The project will include housing, public infrastructure, commercial uses, and the North River Fieldhouse. Developers hope the Fieldhouse will help the city become a youth and adaptive sports tourism destination. City officials say PB Development will begin master planning work immediately. The deadline to register to vote in Indiana's primary election is approaching. As WFYI's Farah Anderson reports, Hoosiers have until April 6th to register.
Indiana's primary election is May 5th, and the general election is November 3rd. During the primaries, voters from the Democratic and Republican parties choose their nominees for federal, state legislative, and local offices ahead of the November election. This year, all 9 of Indiana's U.S. House seats, all 100 seats in the Indiana House, and half of the 50 seats in the Indiana Senate will be on the ballot. To register to vote in Indiana, you must be a U.S. citizen, a resident of the state, and at least 18 years old on or before the next general or municipal election. You must also have lived in your voting precinct for at least 30 days before the election. Residents can register online, by mail, or in person, but the state's voter registration form must be submitted by April 6th. I'm Farah Anderson in Indianapolis.
A federal judge in Indiana will not allow the government to seek the death penalty for a Terre Haute man charged with killing a police officer. WFIU's Ethan Sandweiss reports.
Shane Meehan was charged with premeditated murder of a federal agent in 2021 after prosecutors say he shot and killed Terre Haute Police Detective Greg Ferency at the FBI office in Terre Haute. Judge James Patrick Hanlon said last month that the Department of Justice could not reverse its earlier decision against seeking death for Meehan if convicted. The government's choice to change course follows an executive order signed by President Donald Trump to pursue the death penalty in more circumstances, including the murder of law enforcement officers. Death penalty cases are handled differently, and Hanlon says that the reversal 3 years later would be unfair. Meehan still faces 2 life sentences. His trial is scheduled for August. For WFIU News, I'm Ethan Sandweiss.
It's still uncertain how much money is remaining to sustain Indiana's Dolly Parton Imagination Library program. WFYI's Caroline Beck reports Indiana First Lady Maureen Braun says fundraising is on track.
The National Literacy Program sends children a free book every month from birth to age 5 to any family that signs up. The program's future in Indiana was called into question last year when Governor Mike Braun cut $6 million in funding from the state budget. His wife has taken up the task of keeping the program alive. First Lady Maureen Braun said during her annual breakfast fundraiser that they were about 90% of the way to their 2-year fundraising goal.
One of the reasons I'm so passionate about this cause is that the benefits of what we're doing aren't just for today, but they'll have an impact throughout these kids' lives.
The program currently sends books to over 143,000 Hoosier children. I'm Caroline Beck in Indianapolis.
The governor's office had not responded to questions on how much has been raised as of this recording. The City of Fort Wayne dispersed its first round of opioid settlement fund grants in November. WBOI's Ella Abbott reports the grants went to community organizations focused on all affected by the opioid crisis and on all pathways to recovery.
Hey.
How you been?
Good. How you doing?
Better. Yeah. Finally off the streets.
Awesome. Hey, congrats. Nice.
Staff members with Project Me hand out free meals during the lunch hour every Tuesday at the corner of Coliseum and Goshen. The location is strategic. It's right across from a bus station and in the center of several low-cost hotels off the highway.
I got two for me and my wife. Yeah. Thank you guys every Tuesday. I appreciate it.
Along with lunch, they offer those who come find the branded van supplies like socks and hygiene items. They also give out fresh needles, Narcan, and fentanyl testing strips if requested. It's all part of the organization's focus on harm reduction. Asha Diss founded Project Me nearly 7 years ago, building the outreach and recovery programs from her own experience with substance use.
There wasn't a lot of programming or anything to get into, and in lieu of that, I just set some goals for myself. Because at that point, I had been involved in the criminal legal system for over a decade, using substances and not really knowing how to recover.
Diss says a lot of the traditional pathways to recovery didn't feel right for her because she'd been court-mandated to do them for so long.
And so choosing my own recovery looked like therapy and going to college and just getting the things in place that made sense for me as I was stabilizing.
Project Me follows that same idea, that traditional pathways may not be the best or most effective way to recovery for some people. Diss says the goal at Project Me is to come alongside someone at any stage of their recovery and offer support and services they may otherwise not have access to.
Our goal with that is meaningful engagement with people who use drugs, because that is a big gap in services that exists.
That means supporting people even in their active addictions by offering ways to mitigate risk.
We get kind of a hard rap for harm reduction. So we're a full harm reduction and peer support organization. Which for us, what that means is we do support all pathways of recovery. We support harm reduction as a pathway.
The organization was one of the grantees in the City of Fort Wayne's first round of opioid settlement fund grants, receiving $100,000 that will go to various programming, including free community naloxone trainings. But it's not all just going towards programs Project Me has already been offering. Diss says they'll also be using a portion of the funds to create housing scholarships for those either looking for independent housing, who need assistance with down payments, or those trying to secure beds in recovery residences.
With all the other tangible resources and stuff we have, we've just never had funds to help with housing. So that's been a little bit of a game changer.
Diss wants people to understand that while Project Me is focused on harm reduction, they don't just let people walk out of the door without knowing about paths to recovery.
And while people are making the decision to continue using drugs, we believe that they deserve dignified support just like anybody else does.
That harm reduction principle is also backed by a proven track record of success. Naloxone distribution and syringe exchange programs expanding in Indiana over the past several years have contributed to a 20% drop in overdose deaths in the state. According to data from the Fort Wayne Police Department, Allen County saw a 12% decrease in fatal overdoses from 2024 to 2025, and a 23% drop in non-fatal overdoses. The Recovery Cafe, which also received $100,000 from the city, also takes a harm reduction forward approach to recovery. Executive Director Ryan Marsden says it's about creating a community and a safe place for a person to go to learn about a substance-free life.
The key part about that to me is that somebody wouldn't come to our space if they weren't interested or at least curious about what a life in recovery looks like.
Members of the cafe come in for dinner, which is offered every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Before dinner, staff members give announcements about upcoming events or housekeeping items before they go around the room and invite members to say some of the things they're grateful for.
I'm grateful for family, community, sobriety.
Marsden also has his own experience with substance use disorder before he founded the cafe.
You know, during my own recovery, of all the different pathways to recovery that I attempted, and some of those pathways, you know, obviously weren't for me, and I felt like may have even been a little bit harmful to myself. So the key reason that I wanted to create the cafe is to be inclusive and low barrier.
They don't require 100% abstinence from members of the cafe. They only require that everyone demonstrates safe behavior that doesn't put anyone else inside the space at risk. Marsden also talks a lot about stigma and how it can keep people from seeking out treatment or feeling comfortable talking about their addictions.
This is just like any other condition or disease out there. We wouldn't judge someone for having cancer or diabetes.
There are also several ways substance use can intersect with other struggles people might be experiencing. Mental health issues, poverty, and homelessness are common in recovery communities. But there's another more complicated one, grief.
It's different in the fact that people are often grieving for their family member or those who are, you know, struggling long before potential overdose situation even happens.
Marsden says that opioids especially change people's behaviors very quickly. Family members may feel like they're losing or have lost their loved ones long before an overdose occurs. And for those in recovery, they can often be grieving the life they had before their substance use.
Personality change, people do things they wouldn't do to obtain these substances, including, you know, spending all their money. You know, there's a lot of job loss. There's familial destruction. There's financial destruction.
Stillwater Hospice specializes in grief counseling. They received a $25,000 grant from the opioid settlement funds, which they've been putting towards expanding services aimed at those grieving a loved one lost due to substance use. Laura Guerrero is the bereavement coordinator for Stillwater. She says grief due to substance use disorder loss can be very unique.
We have individuals that struggle with increased feelings of guilt, that maybe they didn't do enough to help their loved one. Sometimes we have individuals that feel guilt because they also are feeling a sense of relief, just due to maybe all the challenges or changes in relationship that they had with their loved one while they were using.
Guerrero says it's also important to be open about the types of people who are impacted by overdose loss.
You know, unfortunately, this can happen to anyone. We see clients from all different kinds of spiritual, cultural, religious, socioeconomical status. I mean, it's really across the board.
DIS praised the approach the city has taken to handing out the funds and encourages anyone who thinks their work may intersect to apply.
Because there are communities even that surround us that, you know, the funds are going towards law enforcement and things like that. It should really be the services that are there to support people and not create barriers or be punitive.
Marston credited the organizations continuing to expand harm reduction and working to combat the stigma around substance use disorders for the declines in both fatal and non-fatal overdoses.
So we want to continue doing what works. You know, we want to continue doing a better job.
The city of Fort Wayne held their second round of grant applications at the beginning of this year and expect to do so every 6 months for the foreseeable future. For WBOI News, I'm Ella Abbott.
We should disclose Stillwater Hospice is an underwriter of WBOI. More news in a moment.
My name's Jody. I'm a longtime WBOI supporter. Sometimes the news is controlled by larger monetary forces and not necessarily the truth. I need to stay informed. I want to stay informed, learn about the world, learn about our local events, and also provide some lightness and some fun, provides relief from what can be hard to hear sometimes. Join me and countless others in protecting public radio. Learn how at wboi.org/save.
Here's what to know for today. Biofuels giant POET is suing Wabash County over a moratorium on carbon capture and sequestration, or CCS, projects. A new state law erases the need for pennies in cash transactions. And Governor Mike Braun told reporters that any data centers moving to Indiana will have to provide 100% of their own energy. That's who and what for Wednesday, March 11th. These stories and more can be found at WBOI.org or on the WBOI app. Subscribe to Who and What on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can ask your smart speaker to play Who and What. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll also enjoy our newsletter, Frequency, at wboi.org/frequency. Music for Who and What is produced by Jack Ankenbrook. From all of us at WBOI, thanks for being with us and have a great rest of your day.